Fascism has been a component of left-wing politics. In response to the Trump presidency, the politics of anti-fascism, reminiscent of the Popular Front of the 30s or the Black Bloc politics of the 90s, have once again been resurrected by the left. How is anti-fascism the same or different today? Why anti-fascism now? We're joined by Elijah Walter on the end, who is a member of UChicago Student Action. We're joined by Jesse Pace, who is a member of the Black Rose Anarchist Federation, and by Ted Sirota, who is the co-initiator of Refuse Fascism and the founder of the Degenerate Artists Against Fascism. He's also a local Chicago artist or a musician. So, we want to begin with Ted.
You guys want me to go first?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for having me. What's your name?
Jack.
Thank you, Jack. Thanks for the introduction. I am one of the co-initiators. There's a long list of people who started Refuse Fascism back in December. I actually started this group, Degenerate Artists Against Fascism, because I've always been interested in the intersection of art and revolution as a musician, and consider myself a revolutionary. So I started that group, and then I saw that Refuse Fascism put out their first statement a couple days later, and I personally was in alignment with that statement and that call. So I used Degenerate Artists, sort of, not used it, but I, one of the points of unity is that we adhere to the line of Refuse Fascism. We unite around the call from Refuse Fascism. So that's how the two organizations have sort of organically kind of grown, and there's some artists that don't really relate to Refuse Fascism very much and relate more to this artist kind of wing, and then there's some back and forth. But anyway, I just wanted to point that out. And I don't want to read a whole lot of prepared written things from other people, but I was just checking out this email I got on the way. And it's real succinct, and I think it will lay out there quickly what Refuse Fascism is talking about. It's from Carl Dix, who's spokesperson for the Revolutionary Communist Party and one of the co-initiators for Refuse Fascism. And it says, "Friends, this is a crucial moment. After Trump's attacks on the NFL players protesting police terror, after his threats to destroy North Korea, after his three Muslim bans, after his intensification of immigration raids, after his response to the white supremacist march in Charlottesville," and I want to just point out in there, Carl didn't even mention his climate denial in the face of these hurricanes and fires and earthquakes. It is clear that the Trump-Pence regime is a nightmare, that the interests of humanity demand that this regime be driven from office before it's too late. There is an organization that has recognized the grave threat this regime poses and the urgency of the situation. This organization is Refuse Fascism, and it has called for people to act now, not just to oppose the horrors this regime is inflicting on humanity, but to remove it from power and end this nightmare. Refuse Fascism has called for people to take to the streets on November 4th and stay in the streets and cities across the country, declaring that this whole regime is illegitimate. These protests must grow day after day and night after night, thousands growing into millions, continuing to act until one demand is met. This nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. If you are one of those who agonize over every move this regime makes and want to see this nightmare ended, you must join this effort. Go to refusefascism.org, read the call for November 4th, and add your name to those endorsing it. Get connected with protests in your area, or begin to organize one. Donate generously to help make this crucial effort a success. Join us in refusing to accept the fascist America and acting to stop it before it's too late." And then that's signed from Carl. And we say that only the determined struggle of millions of people acting together with courage and conviction can drive this regime from power. So what we're talking about, a lot of people get confused, maybe we're talking about a revolution. The reactionaries and fascists with their little press are saying that, you know, communists are planning a communist coup on November 4th to coincide with the centennial of the Russian Revolution. So they're putting out all these lies and slanders. But it's only going to be, they're consolidating their power right now. So every day that passes, they're shredding laws. They're gutting out these institutions that were supposed to be some sort of protection, and they were sort of a buffer. You know, they're deconstructing the administrative state, as Steve Bannon pointed out, and told us exactly what they're doing. And what we're saying in Refuse Fascism that might be a little bit different is that this is capitalism imperialism. This has been a horror, this has been a nightmare from day one, for the native people of this land, for Africans in their millions who were brought here, the Holocaust that happened just in the Middle Passage alone, you know, for women, for Latinos, for Mexicans, for all kinds of people on every hemisphere on this planet. The United States imperialist, capitalist imperialist system has been a nightmare for millions and billions of people. However, for some people that control this system, that's not enough in these times of crisis. The fact that 8 men control the equal amount of wealth to the bottom half of the planet, which is 3.5 billion people, tells us that the world is upside down. You know, and this issue, but the fact that that's not enough, they have to clamp down to this next degree here with Donald Trump, where the completely outrageous, the completely insane, as people put it, the unacceptable, and for good reason unacceptable, is now the norm, is being propagated from the most powerful position on the planet, period. And when we came out from the beginning, we said that Donald Trump is more dangerous than Hitler. And they laughed, and Sarah Taylor, one of our co-initiators, said it on Tucker Carlson on Fox News, and he mocked her. But all you have to do is take a second to understand that in 1933, Hitler didn't have nuclear weapons. Hitler didn't have Twitter. Hitler didn't have, you know, make America great. You know, I mean, he was building his brown shirts. He was building his base. And in a lot of ways, Trump is beyond that. And people laughed and scoffed and said, well, what's he going to be doing, you know, 6 months? All right, he's president. He's going to be tweeting? Is he going to continue to tweet? Is he going to get us in nuclear war? Well, you know he's doing that right now. He's holding the world hostage right now with nuclear weapons. And whether we want to look at that and face that reality or not is up to us. But there's one thing lacking here right now, and that's people sitting back and looking at this system that created this mess in the first place and expecting that they're going to resolve it for us. That Robert Mueller, the top cop, the guy in charge of the FBI, that sits above all of these police murders and all of these, you know, crimes throughout the history of this country, framing people, assassinating them, murdering them, stifling any kind of resistance that the masses of people have tried to come up with in the history of this country. Okay, yes, that's what we're talking about. That is the previous horrors of capitalism and imperialism in the United States, but that's not fascism. And what we're talking about now with the attack on truth and trying to change people's minds so they don't even understand that that black is black and white is white, and that there is no more science and there's no objective reality, this is very, very dangerous. These attacks on the press, saying, calling the corporate mainstream media news, calling it fake news with his followers, which they call his base. But, you know, Hitler had his base too. And it wasn't the Nazis that carried out most of the crimes in Nazi Germany. It was the Germans that carried out their crimes for them. And my great-grandfather was one of those people that was a victim of those crimes. He went back to Poland in the early 30s when he heard that, after emigrating here with my grandfather and their family, and not having an easy time getting in, he heard that what was going on in Germany. They had some, give me a 2-minute warning. They had some property back there, and he wanted to sell the property before it got too bad. A lot of artists were getting out of Germany at the time because they knew what was coming because they were getting attacked, and their art was declared illegal. So he went back to get the land. It was bad timing. The Germans invaded. They rounded up the entire village, which was 200 men, women, and children. They made them dig a ditch, and they shot them all into the ditch, and there was one survivor. So this fascism is very personal to me. And it should be to all of us, and it's not just Jewish people. You know, it's never again should be never again for everybody, every group of people. And you guys are, okay, thank you. I just want to encourage people to step back and think about our call, which is, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. We're talking about humanity. We're talking about the people who are getting rounded up by ICE. We're talking about the people in Puerto Rico who've been devastated by this climate change, which is going to be fueled by the climate denial, the science denial. We're talking about the people in North Korea and South Korea who are in the, under the gun, the nuclear gun, as we all are right now. Look at history, learn from history, don't ignore the lessons of history. You know, this is a qualitative leap in the way that society is going to be governed from now on. We're fighting for the future of the planet. This nightmare must end. Join us on November 4th. Thank you very much.
Mine is a little bit more prepared, and I find it easier to organize my thoughts that way. You'll have to excuse me for being so, what's the word, rehearsed. Black Rose Rosa Negra is an organization of revolutionaries who share a common visions of a new world, a world where people collectively control their own workplaces, communities, and land, where all basic needs are met, a world where power and participation flow from the bottom upward, and society is organized for people's aspirations, passions, and needs, rather than profit, white supremacy, and racial domination, patriarchy, or imperialism, and where we live sustainably with the planet. Here to talk about anti-fascism from an anarchist perspective, but in order to do this, we must have, first, a definite understanding of what fascism is. Fascism itself can at times be a difficult thing to define, with there being multiple frameworks to build a theoretical understanding around. There exists a myriad of definitions in the left itself, distinct from a liberal historical definition of it. Fascism is often thought of as some form of a particularly virulent authoritarian nationalism, hallmarked with aggressive racism, reactionary and conservative traditionalism, as anti-liberal and anti-communist, as well as having an expansionist approach to foreign policy as part of a general movement towards seizure of absolute political power, the elimination of opposition, and creation of a regulated economic structure to transform social relations within a modern, self-determined culture. Other essential features include political aesthetic of romantic symbolism, mass mobilization, a positive view of violence, and promotion of masculinity, youth, and charismatic leadership, as defined by Griffin and Feldman in 2004. Bulgarian communist and general secretary of the Communist International, Georgi Dimitrov, said in his famous description of fascism as the open terrorist dictatorship of the most reactionary, most chauvinistic, and most imperialist elements of finance capital, since 1935. For a more contemporary definition, one that reflects the multiple regimes and their various manifestations since then, Zach Cope said in 2015 in his book, Divided World, Divided Class, Global Political Economy and the Stratification of Labor Under Capitalism, fascism is the attempt by the imperialist bourgeoisie to solidify its rule on the basis of popular middle-class support for counter-revolutionary dictatorship. He also said that social fascism offers higher wages and higher living standards to the national workforce at the expense of foreign and colonized workers. As such, denunciations of unproductive capital of bourgeois nations, that is, the dominant imperialist nations, and of the workers' betrayal by reformist socialism are part and parcel of the fascist appeal. He also said, geographically speaking, on its own soil, fascism is imperialist repression turned inward. The conflict that we see is not necessarily by a lack of a living wage that we see so many on the right turning to more of a fascist appeal. Instead, the conflict arises out of irreconcilable contradictions of capitalism itself, and the implacable enmity of the exploiters and the oppressors have for those that they exploit and oppress. Fair.org, which aims to fact-check broadsheet newspapers, reported that between August 12th and September 12th of this year, immediately after Charlottesville, the top six broadsheet newspapers ran 28 opinion-based editorials condemning anti-fascist tactics and only 27 condemning neo-Nazis and white supremacists. It's important if one's going to maintain an ideological monopoly, paint both sides as equivalent fringe opinions outside of mainstream political discourse, regardless of their content. Regardless of the fact that one side wants to commit genocide to construct a white ethno-state, while the other really just does not want them to be able to do that. Mayor Thiessen from the Washington Post on 17th of August said, yes, Antifa is the moral equivalent of neo-Nazis. James S. Robbins from USA Today on 30th of August said, Trump is right. Violent extremists on both sides are a threat. Alan Dershowitz with the Wall Street Journal said on 10th of September that the hard right and the hard left pose different dangers. Alan went on to say, the danger posed by the extreme hard left is more about the future. Leaders of tomorrow are being educated today on campus. The tolerance of censorship and even violence to suppress dissenting voices may be a foretaste of things to come. Now, remarks like these from Mr. Dershowitz are always curious to me, that the hard left is more of a danger to someone writing in the Wall Street Journal than advocates of fascism. Now, save for the immediate economic reasons that come to mind, comments like these frame white supremacy and fascist politics as dissenting voices, putting them on par with a bad Yelp review. There is no moral equivalence. Fascists glorify violence as proof of white supremacy, uphold genocide, ethnic cleansing, white ethnicity. Antifa, whose ranks include people of color, women, Jews, queer and trans people, and others targeted by Nazis, are anti-racist, mostly anti-capitalist. Equating the two is being apologists for racism, fascism, genocide, and must be denounced. Antifa see themselves as practitioners of a strategic or tactical approach to dealing with fascism in public spaces, cyberspaces, and elsewhere, and hope that others whom they defend and whose backs they have will treat and welcome them as such. They are willing to and capable of working with others who have a nonviolent approach. Now, as long as we stick to this free speech narrative, direct actions and community defense can be framed as censorship and leftist terrorism. Because, you know, I do think censorship is dangerous. And within the realm of practical reason, I do subscribe to the notion that excessive censorship cuts us off from discourse. But how vulgar a position is it that we should treat advocates of genocide as legitimate candidates for debate? But of course, the far right, the morally superior centrists who love bearing their crosses, condemn both sides and attempt to create a distinction between the kind of overt fascism of white supremacists rallying in Charlottesville and the kind of alt-light provocateurs like Milo Yiannopoulos, who was shut down at USC Berkeley. And Milo doesn't advocate violence against anyone that he has a right to give his speeches to young Republicans. That stopping his talks is an example of Antifa's extremist takes on censorship, but in the talk he was planning on giving at Berkeley that day, he was going to publicly out trans students in a slideshow, as well as demonstrate how to report undocumented students to ICE. Even if painted as a clever, alt-light provocateur, Milo is still upholding the values of fascism and a white ethnic state, even if he's just doing it for book sales and clickbait. Make no mistake, he's making fascism look legitimate.
In about 2 minutes.
2 minutes? Boston Free Speech Rally was shut down with 1,001 counter-protesters to fascists. And those numbers came not from black-blocking Antifa, but from working-class members of the community. After that, 67 rallies all across the country were canceled, and only because of the counter-demo in Boston, not necessarily as a result of what happened in Charlottesville. The bulk of fascist forces marching in Charlottesville and elsewhere have been not people thrust aside by capitalism, but quite privileged males, many collegian or petty bourgeois, intent on provoking, on proving that they are not just internet trolls, but IRL fascists. The Antifa have in no way embraced the holy war, as Chris Hedges puts it, but thoughtfully adopted security culture and physical disruption of fascists, among many other perfectly nonviolent tactics, based on their proven efficacy on other occasions and in other countries, disorienting and defeating fascists.
Yeah, I think that the emergence of Donald Trump is both sort of an anomaly, but at the same time, completely not an anomaly. And I think what you guys have said is true, that, you know, fascism, we can think about it one way, sort of as an outgrowth and intensification in a lot of ways of what capitalism, especially within a sort of the context of a national economy and the discourse around that. There's really not a lot within fascism and why it is so despicable that we don't also see within sort of the standard machinations of capitalism under every other president before Donald Trump. And I think, like, if you look at the emergence of Nazis and Donald Trump and sort of the success of anti-fascist politics in the 30s, in 40s, in terms of mobilizing a lot of people, I think that paints a clearer picture of just sort of what the opportunity is to organize against fascism. I think, like, it lays bare sort of the things that are so horrible and inhumane just in the way the world was structured sort of before the crisis that's been emerging since like 2008 or so, that I think it's fair to situate Donald Trump as an outgrowth of. And yeah, there is a lot that's terrifying within sort of the normalization of a lot of what he's talking about. And I think fighting that normalization is important, but also recognizing that, you know, the things he's normalizing aren't new. They're things that have sort of been within American society, especially. And they sound awful when you say them, but whether you say it or not, they're still happening. So what's really exciting, I think, and like you said, in Boston, it wasn't a bunch of very, you know, ideologically sound people, you know, figuring out what to do and going and do it. It was people who were like, hey, I'm just a guy, this seems like it sucks, I'm going to go move against this. And there were people who presented that opportunity to average people that allowed, you know, such a effective response to emerge. And so I think in thinking about this crisis, whether we say Donald Trump's a proto-fascist, a fascist, not a fascist, regardless, what's happening is bad, and that's clear to a lot of people who have never considered themselves part of the left, and probably right now would say they're not part of the left. So I think what can be done is sort of to tie definitely Donald Trump to the things he's doing, but tie back further to really dig into that history. You know, like, Milo Yiannopoulos can't tell how to report students to ICE if there is no ICE, right? The problem at the end of the day can't be him so much as the institutions that he's able to sort of cater to and filter people into. I don't have a clear answer or anything to go forward with, but I think, yeah, it's a very exciting time to strategize and then think about what can be done to make sure, like, people like Donald Trump and people who share Donald Trump's thoughts but are not, you know, just sort of like idiots on some level, right? Like, you're going to see a more organized response. You're going to see more people like Steve Bannon rather than Donald Trump sort of emerging, I think. And in order to stem that and to fight that, there needs to be sort of a large, not just a rejection of the most recent outgrowth, but a legitimate alternative of something that breaks not just with the worst parts of fascism, but breaks fundamentally with sort of the nationalisms and capitalisms and chauvinisms that fuel it in a big way. That's my statement.
Thank you very much. Now we're going to give the panelists each about a minute or two to respond to each other if they would like to.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciated the different definitions of fascism. I was shocked when I kind of came back out on around this topic. I grew up in the 80s, so it was like, and growing up, like, with my history, fascism was never a question. I didn't quite realize how much the alt-right had flipped it, even the word, and to attack, you know, But however, I do want to apologize for not having any prepared remarks. So, also, I just want to say, I hear what you're saying. I just want to reinforce that there is this Christian fascist element under, you know, that Mike Pence represents, and it's a force in society, and it represents millions of people, and they've been organizing, and they've had billions of dollars behind them, and they've been homeschooling, and they've been planning this, and they have an agenda, and they're in the White House now. And this unbridled capitalist pig, you know, he's willing to whack the knees. He's willing to go into the White House and call every NFL player the N-word and call their mothers the B-word and brag about it. And that's what these fascists need in order to carry out this vicious program. So it's not about really one man, and it's not going to be Steve Bannon, because he'll work on another vehicle like he did with Sarah Palin and Jeff Sessions, and then he found Trump. So it may be directly related to his ideology. But this is a regime that is in power in the United States right now, and is consolidating their power, and they are fascists. And history tells us that we have a window. When fascists come to power, there's a small window of time to prevent them from consolidating their power. That time is now. It doesn't usually last more than a year, a couple of years, before they clamp down fully. The other window is people's willingness to come out and resist against that. And I do think that we're all agreeing that massive resistance and showing these fascists that are the foot soldiers and the ones in the White House, that people who care about humanity, people who care about the future, and maybe you're not a socialist, maybe you're not an anarchist, maybe you're not a communist, maybe you're a freaking Republican like Richard Painter, who sees this, you know, this qualitative leap, but we have to defeat them, and in that struggle, we're going to bring millions forward who are going to want to see a different future, because what I see around this campus, and my daughter goes to Wellesley and these campuses, this is going to be crushed in a couple decades. You're not going to see this kind of multicultural, tolerant sort of campuses. They're not going to go for that. They're trying to crap. They're trolling it all the campuses right now. They're not accepting this. So, you know, it's up to your generation's got to rise up too. The youth have to help lead this in. And again, let's unite. Let's unite against a common enemy and build a united front against us. Whether you agree that they're technically this type of fascist or that type of fascist, if you agree that they are a grave danger to humanity and the planet, that trumps all of this bullshit with the Electoral College putting him into place with a mechanism that was designed to uphold and reinforce slavery.
Yeah, totally. I agree with that. I think it's important to remember.
Jesse, could you speak up a bit?
Of course I can.
Thank you.
It's important to remember that you know, fascism as well as communism, like, both developed out of a want to address the failures of capitalism itself. And we've reached a stage in capitalism where it's falling apart, it can't sustain itself, and it can either go one of two ways. It can either go towards emancipation of the human race, or it can go towards just some not great places, I think.
Yeah. I definitely agree with all that. Yeah, and I think that's part of why I think we can still be hopeful here, is because in terms of the world, sort of the raw materials for an incredible world are already here. Like, there have been incredible advances in, like, science and technology and health and all these things that will continue to grow, right? Like, the idea, automation, once it's not a thing sort of in conflict with people, but like, allowing them to live their lives more prosperously, like, that's something that I think can and should be talked about in thinking not only what the nice world we could return to, but something we can push through this and through, you know, millions of people mobilizing through that collective work, start to see the sort of emergence and push for something better than we had before the crisis.
Okay, thank you guys very much. Okay, I think we're gonna open it up now to questions. So if you have a question, raise your hand.
I have two, I'll try and be quick. So my first is about history, because a couple of things have come up. First of all, the 80s, and in the 80s, right, Reagan would have been himself accused of fascism, and you would have seen, you know, you saw kind of the rise of these KKK groups, which people were calling fascists. You had the rise of Black Bloc, Antifa. So we kind of saw it then, and in some ways it seems as though, you know, these people really had their day in the 80s, or if we go back, we could say they really had their day, you know, in the 50s and the 60s, at the height of Jim Crow, which was also, you know, a part of the administered state. So my question is twofold. One, how do we learn from kind of these past phases of kind of racist, white supremacist, neo-Nazi, whatever you want to call it, fascism that seem to be related to today's phenomenon? And then two, I wanted to push a bit on this question of the administered state, because the critique by the new left, right, in the 60s and 70s would have been that actually the administered state was, you know, in some ways American fascism. And then that it was dismantled kind of slowly through at least the 80s and 90s, if not through LBJ in the 70s. So I was wondering if you could address that. And then my other question to all the panelists is kind of, what's the end game of this? Because I've been getting maybe a couple different threads, because on one hand we have Ted, who talked about, well, we're not going to be having a revolution right away. This is about getting everyone, Republicans, Democrats, leftists, whoever, who are against Trump to oppose Trump and get him out of office. Whereas then, you know, we had Jesse, who brought up, well, this is a question of really getting past capitalism or not. And then Elijah, who talked about how Trump is, in a sense, a continuation of what we've seen from presidents before in both parties, who might, you know, potentially find themselves erstwhile allies of the Trump resistance. So what's really like the end game for this in terms of the struggle for socialism and kind of being able to overcome this phenomenon that seems to have reared its head throughout the history of the United States? Thank you.
Who's first? Over this way?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I think the point about history is really crucial, because I think it really reveals that the left really hasn't been winning, and even before Trump, like, the right was winning. Like, whether or not you consider the Democratic Party to be left or right or wherever, the Republican Party gained, like, 2,000 seats throughout, like, state legislatures during the Obama administration. And I think, like, looking back and back and back, you can see, like, the New Deal not as a victory for the left, but sort of a containment of a crisis regarding finance capitalism. That was definitely pushed and fueled by the left, but the ultimate result was not liberatory in any full or complete sense. So I think, yeah, the main lesson from history, I think, is to note that everything that's come about before has been a compromise with the political imagination that really, I think, encompasses the world that a lot of people want, just in terms of, like, things being generally good, and that, like, that is sort of a program that has been fought for and, like, should be fought for going forward, but that, like, to say you want another New Deal, or to say you want, like, the 1999 WTO protests again, I think, like, acknowledging those both as, like, victories and in steps forward in certain senses, but also, like, ultimately failures, right? Capitalism's still here. Yeah. And I think, yeah, same with the, in terms of, like, the United States, sort of, like, I don't know, like, people talk a lot about fascism in terms of sort of a myth that you sort of, the restoration of this great national past that doesn't exist. I think within just sort of the normal operations of America, you have something similar, right? The fact that any student growing up thinks about rich slave owners as sort of the architects of this great wonderful thing and not the architects of a document that set up a state to benefit them. And yeah, in terms of endgame, yeah, I think a big part of that is recognizing, like, as Americans, where we stand, recognizing that this crisis is not just within the United States. Like, if you look at Duterte in the Philippines, like, what's going on in India with the BJP, like, this is a terrifying thing. I think that's terrifying for most people across the globe, and the fact that that constituency, if you can call it that, exists, is the source of hope as well, that most people fucking hate this. Yeah,
it's hard. The question of the end game, for me, is, you know, fully automated queer space communism. Like, I think that should be ultimately the end goal, right? But as far as how do we learn from these past phases of the way that pre-existing power structures have maintained their authority, it's tricky, you know, especially in consideration with this idea of, like, the administered state. It seems like bourgeoisie is going to use whatever state apparatus is in place to maintain themselves. So I remember there was a lot of talk from leftists who naively were like, oh, Steve Bannon, like, is he like a secret comrade? Like, is he gonna, you know? Yeah, it's completely crazy. It's completely crazy. But, like, this notion of, like, yeah, like, you brought up, like people wanting to call Reagan, like, a fascist, so on and so forth. I think we're really talking about the way hierarchy maintains itself. And so I think we should be asking questions of how can we dismantle those systems of hierarchy, I suppose.
Yeah, I should clarify, because what you kind of paraphrased me, and I should also clarify that sometimes I have to speak as me, and sometimes as a representative of refused fascism, because those two lines are different things. So, I'll tell you one thing, the Democrats are no solution. So when you're talking about the administrative state or administered state, and a lot of people, I find, that kind of rely on counterpunch, or there's a certain type of leftist that I come across that, you know, it's always been fascist. Okay, well, you know, this is dialectical. There's different nations of people within this nation, and I wouldn't tell an African-American person who grew up in Watts or, you know, the South Bronx or wherever, or right here in Chicago, that has faced the open terror of police and the open terror of racist mobs for decades, that it's not fascist. It's fascistic terror. You know, they've been using this type of terror on certain communities in this country for decades. That's why it's nothing new. But we have to be scientific. We have to look at the situation historically and analyze it. If we don't know what we're facing, then how can we fight it? If we can't define it, yes, as a young punk rocker, we called Ronald Reagan a fascist. He was acting like a fascist, you know. But these people, Caspar Weinberger, and, you know, they all came from Nixon, you know. And then Nixon was a vice president, and he was a governor of a state, and he was a congressman. He was a lifetime politician in this system, this bourgeois capitalist system. George Bush the first, George Bush the second. They're all part of this. What's going on now is a break from that. The Steve Bannon, the Stephen Miller, the Trump, what they're doing is, that's globalism to them. You know, they're moving into this is a qualitative leap that's happening. Reagan was, again, he was an actor, and it was like a kind of like an 80s version of this in a way. You can sort of see that. He was an actor. People are like, Ronald Reagan, he's an actor. He slept in bed with a monkey, you know. He can't be president, but he was. But he didn't talk about grabbing women by the pussy. And he didn't, you know, denigrate, you know, he didn't call for a complete shutdown on Muslims in the United States. He didn't call, you know, for a border war, and he wasn't holding these Nuremberg rallies around the country, whipping up his foot soldiers that are then seen in the street. And the difference between the 80s and now is that when the Nazis tried to march to Skokie, you know, They were wearing the armbands and they were wearing their brown shirts. They weren't wearing white polos and khakis with their faces on, you know, I mean, Klansmen weren't marching without their hoods on with torches openly in liberal college campuses. This is different, you know. Sid, my friend back here with Refused Fascism, he was around the 60s. He can tell you stories about Vietnam, you know, era stuff and the veterans, you know. I can. I learned from them. But I was around the 80s in the Reagan era, and it was hell growing up in that time. And we did think that, you know, there was this, it was constant, this, you know, instead of terrorism, it was the Soviet Union. So I grew up with communism as being the evil empire, the enemy, you know. That's not really why I ended up becoming a communist, but I did it because, you know, I did my study, you know. But the end game for me, personally, we need a revolution. You know, this system is bankrupt. It needs to be swept, as Marx said, in the you know, the waste bin of history. It cannot sustain the future, where the globe is going, and these reactionaries are trying to reverse things. Can't be done, you know, and the only way to do it is to clamp down severely. And we're seeing it in Turkey, we're seeing it in Hungary, we're seeing it in Poland, we saw Le Pen in France, we saw Brexit, we saw them running, now getting a foothold in Germany, you know. This is very much like the 1930s. So I want to ring the alarm. I don't think there's enough alarm, and I think this is still getting normalized, and people are trying to accept this, and it's unacceptable. I could go on forever addressing your question, but, you know, I don't...
Thank you.
Open terror, that's one thing I wanted to say. You made that one definition about open terror. We didn't see this kind of open terror. I mean, black people did it in the 50s, and you know, but now it with transgender and Heather Heyer and, you know, this kind of, we're not seeing it at a societal level.
Okay, so I also kind of have a two-fold question. So in the absence of, like, a mass organized left, or, like, much less, like, a party today on the left, I was wondering to all of the panelists whether, A, you see, like, the rise of a mass fascist movement as tenable, given that there's an absence of, like, a mass leftist movement from which it could, you know, try and, like, organize the failure of, and then B, whether, like, organizing against Trump can amount to a struggle for socialism when it seems that, like, a politics of, like, opposing Trump kind of aligns with, like, the Democrats and, like, reaffirms the Democrats. And also, how would doing away with Trump bring us closer to a socialist revolution? Since I believe you just made a comment about how we need a revolution, and obviously your politics are also very much anti-Trump, along the lines of Antifa, so...
I think it's a good thing to point out, though, that a lot of the anti-Trump rhetoric is used to just kind of vindicate the Democratic Party. And I think what we're seeing is, and the reason why so many Americans are so opposed to Trump really is because it's making them address how ugly the system in and of itself is, right? I think that because he's so open about what the rest of the system does, that's what give people cause for alarm. I think this question of, like, is a mass fascist movement possible? I think it's pretty close. I think that if you ask the majority of Americans in this country how they feel about any given thing, what they want to see their president do, I think that they're going to try and advocate for the kind of, like, harsh authoritarianism that can be the hallmark of fascism. It doesn't necessarily have to be fascism. I don't think that they even of themselves, they don't have to identify as fascists. They don't even have to know what that word is. But just with what it is they want to see out of a political machine, I think that we're pretty close to being there. And I think that for me personally, I think that the only way to combat it is to build a mass movement of the left, and to, at the very least, start a network, start organizing, start bringing people together, start putting aside ideological differences that have splintered us for so long, to coalesce into something bigger.
I don't get this. I mean, I understand that you say you're anti-Trump. What you're saying is people then assume that you're a Democrat, right? Or you're pro-Hillary Clinton. in a sense.
I think what she's getting at is that so much of the Democratic Party and so many people that are that, yeah.
I think that we have to avoid doing the opposite of what we should be doing, which is Trump is a fucking fascist, you know? And we need to drive him and Pence and the whole regime from power. That doesn't make me a Democrat, like, you know, though he must have just started being an activist because he didn't. I've run into a lot of this in the street and stuff, and I think let's define it, you know, for what it is, and if we have differences, let's debate that out in the streets. You know, let's debate that out as we go. But we don't have time. You know, they're clamping down. They're in power now. You know how many laws have been shredded and passed just in these first 6 months? And people are talking about, 40 more months. You know, this is not sustainable for the planet, for this society, and for our future. You know? I mean, yeah, I'm anti-Trump. I'm anti-capitalism. I'm anti-imperialism. But this is a stage where it's like state of emergency. We have to drive them back. And then we're not going to, you know, people don't realize that we're never going back to anything. You know, and I'm sorry, maybe.
Oh, Elijah.
Elijah said about, you know, laying the groundwork for this fascist state. You can't, that's right, you can't let the system off the hook for what's been developing all these years. Obama, you know, he set up this, helped continue this beautiful, you know, apparatus, this modern security police state, and they handed the keys over, and he went to the inauguration and sat there politely. That's the system. They brought us to this point, you know, but now they want to put in this fascist open terror that's going to clamp down on society like a way that we've never seen, and people are assuming there's going to be elections, and that, you know, this bourgeois democracy is going to continue. It's not. It's not going to unless we get out in the streets and we make our demands heard in the tens of millions. What you saw at the Women's March, it just has to be a start. We can't, these structures aren't going to hold and protect us. The police aren't going to protect us. You know, these institutions are not going to protect us. Nobody, like the guy Mark Bray, who wrote the book on Antifa, he said, nobody's writing celebratory memoirs of all the people who remained silent while the Nazis were consolidating their power in society. You know, those who didn't speak up. There's no great bios written about them, you know? There's nobody praising the Weimar Republic for giving Nazis their right to free speech and allowing them to participate. Isn't that great? The Weimar Republic was so open that they let the Nazis, and you know, join and take over the government. That's the important thing. No, the important thing is that they were fascists, and there's a certain point you have to go outside of the bounds of what this system says is acceptable. And I'm not talking about breaking laws per se or doing any violent revolutionary acts, but mass civil disobedience, refusing to move, refusing to get up, and continuing that day after day, night after night. We have to assert and raise our demand. And if that topples drives the regime out in itself, that's one thing. If it creates a political crisis that makes this apparatus within the system work faster to bring up these charges on whatever it is they're going to drive him out of power with, then so be it. But that's not going to happen without the people. And in that struggle, we can debate and we can talk about a future that we want, you know, and we can move forward. But it's got to start now. I hope everyone in this room that's, you know, motivated or sees what's happening starts to become an organizer of others if you're not already, you know, in one way or another. It's time for action.
Respond quick to, yeah, how do you build political resistance to Trump that builds towards something further even? And I think in part, it's a matter, right, like the Dems aren't actually putting up any resistance, at least like the people in the, like, in office. But I think like a lot of them can be pushed, and it's sort of part of this current crisis of Trump, I think, in part, is that like a lot of the mainstream Democratic rhetoric is becoming like in part untenable, and I think that's something that can be leveraged in a pretty productive way to get people. I don't care what they actually think, but if you get like Democratic officials in office to start talking about and voting for, like, things that, you know, defunding ICE or like actually like progressive border security. That isn't, well, progressive border security is no borders, but actually like they don't really have anything to fall back on, and I think that's also, that's one like incredibly terrifying, that the resistance party in the United States cannot do jack shit. But at the same time, like, they do have modicums of state power in different capacities that I think people can see sort of the breakdown of the former consensus, and I think within that breakdown, not everyone's going to pivot right, and I think there are people in power who can be forced to pivot left through stuff like mass mobilization, not just targeting the Trump administration, but forcing elites and people with political power to pick a fucking side.
Yeah. I'm Sid, I'm with Refused Fascism. I wanted to speak to the historical point. If you can imagine Germany before World War II, what would it have meant historically if the German people had actually risen up and prevented Hitler from consolidating his rule? I think we're in a similar situation. There's a great deal at stake. It's possible there wouldn't have been a World War II, or as Reverend Niemöller said, he's the one that had the famous saying about first they came for the communists, I wasn't a communist, right? And they came for the, you know, other people, I wasn't a Jew, they didn't take me. He said in a book he wrote, as I recall, that if the Lutherans had come out in the street to oppose Hitler, he said they might have lost 30,000 people, but they would have prevented the deaths of millions. And I think with Trump, it's a similar situation. He has his hand on the nuclear trigger. He's an open white supremacist. Right? There's a genocidal character to a lot of the things that they're doing. There's a great deal at stake. And I did just want to say we brought some literature from Refused Fascism for people that want to fight what's going on. Please take things and give them to your friends and organize for a mass action on November 4th. So, thank you.
I wanted to remind the panelists of the last time that the left sort of rang the alarm on fascism en masse, namely the election and re-election of George W. Bush in 2000 and 2004 and the sort of war on terror. You know, out of this came the anti-war movement, which sort of produced the largest demonstrations in U.S. history, and yet the anti-war movement didn't produce a viable left opposition to the ruling class. Instead, we just got the election of Obama. So all of the panelists here seem to see this like present crisis as a moment of opportunity for organizing. But my question is sort of, what is the form of organization that is possible? Is it just a massive, is it just mass mobilization that can then be liquidated next election? Or how do the panelists imagine something coming out of this in a more concrete sense?
Well, I would say again, just to make the distinction that, you know, George W. Bush, you know, is painting expressionist paintings, and, you know, like that administration was still very much a part of the traditional political mechanisms of the system, very much in line and in part of that. All those people that served with him, Dick Cheney, Colin Powell, Norman Schwarzkopf, you know, the whole administration, they were Republicans. They came up, yes, and they were fascistic. But I guess it's just, you have to have a correct analysis. You have to understand a little bit on a deeper level that, you know, these mechanisms of of capitalism, imperialism, and what's the dirty little secret underneath that, and how does it develop, and what does it rely on, and how do you get rid of it, and what are the different manifestations that it can come in. But, you know, I'm on the left, I was out here demonstrating against with thousands of others against Bill Clinton in 1994 when he was, you know, against the mass incarceration of black youth and police terror and, you know, Obama, the drone strikes and all stuff. You have to see the system for what it is, you know, and a unified left would mean that people have to start to agree on what's the solution for that. And I don't see, you know, I see only good things in terms of that if people get into the streets and do these forums like this and we meet each other and we talk and we debate it out face to face, because if you're not out in the streets and you're not making these links, we're not really doing it. We're not really forming the bonds that need to be formed. But, you know, for me, it's going to take in the end, you know, millions of people. That's a different question. I mean, to me, they're two different questions. What do we do now in the state of emergency? And then where do we do moving forward? You know, and again, for me, those are two different answers. For Refuse Fascism, it's that we need to declare that this whole regime is illegitimate. They're a grave danger to all humanity. They are fascist. They didn't have open terror advocates like Jeff Sessions, you know, and what they want to do is stop and frisk. Not only is it was declared unconstitutional by, you know, the Supreme Court, but they want to install that as the norm, you know. This borders, what's going on with these ICE raids where they're ripping, you know, yes, Obama was the deporter in chief, you know, and the Democrats want to hide that, and that part of the system, they don't want people to really, you know, discover that he deported 3 million people, and there was terror for immigrants more so under him than under George W. Bush. But right now, this is a different level that they're taking it to. And there's no, once they clamp down, there's very few, if any, examples in history of people from within a fascist state overthrown. It's like supermax. It's usually overthrown then through a war or an invasion from an outside country.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to Pat's question. I think the notion that building this kind of mass organizing around any particular regime or administration, I think therein lies the problem. I think we should be building a kind of mass organization of the left around a broader and deeper analysis of systemic problems, you know, because you're right, like, where did the anti-war movement go? It got us nowhere. And if we keep addressing symptoms of the problem and never actually addressing the systemic cause of the problem, we're never going to be able to fix anything. It's difficult. It is definitely discouraging when you see something like Occupy gain so much momentum behind it and then again just be squashed. You know, it's a thing that I'm not sure if I necessarily have the answer to be honest.
Yeah, I guess I was a young boy during the Bush era. But I think one thing that does exist, that didn't exist then, that's come out of Occupy, that's come out of like the presidential campaign of Bernie Sanders and like the 2008 financial crash, is I think a lot more people are closer to that sort of fundamental root understanding of like how, like, what's causing this and how it can be sort of moved beyond. Not saying that like sort of social welfare programs are gonna liberate humanity, but that, yeah, like, organizing is never going to be a matter of like, oh, this is a good environment to organize in, this is a bad environment to organize in. So like, no, like, it's going to be hard and it's going to be like very painstaking work regardless of the crises or opportunities that present themselves. So I think, yeah, like you're saying, like, these, thinking of these long-term political organizations, that aren't necessarily focused on Trump. Like DSA has the numbers that like nothing had in 2000. So I think like in terms of movement towards a type of, I don't think there should even be one like mass organization, but I think the possibility for uniting a lot of different groups around something we're more equipped to do, and I think more people are more proximal to than dream like the early 2000s.
Yeah, with the left so divided, do you see it possible uniting, you know, uniting to drive the, you know, Trump-Pence regime out, you know, or and how do you see that happening? And if we successfully drive down the Trump-Pence regime, right, where do we go from there? You know, where do we go from there? What do you guys think that would look like? I'd like to hear, because I mean, I feel like getting rid of the Trump-Pence regime would give us more elbow room, but we would still have a lot more work to do. You know, I think that would just be like a beginning.
Yeah, well, I mean, thanks, Brojo. Nice shirt. You know, we get that, refuse fascism gets, that's the first question from a lot of people who hate this shit and are thinking about the next thing, you know, well, what do you want to install? Well, we're not that type of, we're not that organization, you know, of what, but, and there's a million different, well, not a million, but a lot of different scenarios of how this could play out and how they are removed from power. But basically, the model that we're taking on is similar to what people did in South Korea, people did in Egypt. You know, recently there were some victories in Poland, the people's mass protests, but it's, and in that process, you're going to be bringing millions and millions of people to political consciousness. And, you know, I mean, some people are ashamed to admit now, you know, let me put it this way, I've met so many young people who have tried to school me in this way and that way, and it's fine, let's just talk about, you know, let's debate on the merit. You know, but so many people, just their first protest was the Women's March, you know, and that was like 6 months ago, and that's great. That's great. The Women's March, you know, it failed in certain different ways. Like, I was there, we were trying to shut it down before it started. That was our call, stop this regime before it starts. So our actions were called for before that inauguration, not the day after they get it, you know. So we broke with them on that, but it was so important to bring these millions of people to political life, and that's what's going to have to happen. Nothing's going to happen unless that happens. And then, like, when I started hitting the streets and becoming more of a revolutionary, I would go to a protest that was around the first Gulf War, and afterwards I'd go around and I'd buy the newspaper from every single organization, you know, and I'd go home and I'd read their paper, and I'd read their line, and I'd do it again, and I'd do it again, so I could start to differentiate between, well, what is this group saying? They're saying they're calling for a revolution, but so is this group. Well, why are they saying it? They're different from that group. You know, people have to do their own research and decide what do you think is going to be, you know, the world. Where I would break with most personally, not refuse fascism, but with a lot of, not all, but some anarchists is this, you know, they're on the role of the state, you know, and we can get a whole debate on that and we can go on forever. But right now, there's a state of emergency going and they're clamping down and they're consolidating their power, you know.
I agree with Ted in that there should be a diversity of tactics. this is going to sound so pessimistic, but the question of can the left unify to dismantle this current administration, I don't think so, in that it doesn't reflect the kind of agency that individuals have within the system that is in place currently. The only thing that's going to throw Trump out of office as far as the current political machine goes is NGOs like calling the banner for it. And it's an unfortunate and sad reality that we're in. I think that what we should be doing instead is the only way that the left could unify to get the current administration out the door is by essentially being co-opted by the the mainstream politics that are already in place. So it's a question of, like, you know, do we stay hardline in our various ideological stances and say, oh no, I'm not going to engage with that machine, or do we learn to change our tactics according to what is most advantageous at the time? I think that's probably a better way to go. Is, you know, is not holding out for a revolution that may or may not come, but just I don't know.
Yeah, no, I definitely, like, agree that, right, like, the right is winning and it's been winning, and so I think, yeah, in terms of concrete political strategy, I personally, like, I don't think removing Trump would do a whole lot. Like, Paul Ryan would still be in charge, Mitch McConnell would still be in charge, we've seen them sign on to pretty much everything this regime's put forward. Not to say, like, these are part of the same coherent political thrust. Yeah, I guess more than any, like, mass movement or mass organization, I think the problem at hand is ultimately, like, how do you get people to envision themselves as agents of political change, and then how can we collectively equip ourselves to be in a position to actually win? And, like, that's not a matter of, like, there's, you have, like, two things in, like, terms of your values, which I think people already have their values, and, like, for the vast majority of people in the world, what's fundamentally, like, in their hearts is the vision of, like, a better world. And then you have concrete strategy in terms of politics, which is about getting those people to see what they have in their hearts and sketch out an avenue, not a, like, radicalize them so they go do a single thing that doesn't actually work, but actually thinking critically, what are the concrete, like, what politically needs to be done to see what we need to see. And that's as a very, like, big and wafty answer, but I think, like, I don't think there's going to be one broadsheet that puts forward the correct science that really leads us forward. I think it's about, you know, getting average, just normal people that, like, you might think they're dumb, you think they're, like, very politically uninformed, but, like, those are the people who need to be won over. I think the left, if there's, like, one sort of main thrust, is that there are a lot of potential allies right now, and there are a lot of barriers to transmitting a message of, like, hope and a way forward that needs to be addressed, not as a moral issue, but as a, like, practical political issue. When you think about, like, corporate media, right? Like, Trump's attack on the corporate media, I think, is not unfounded in a lot of ways. Like, is CNN fake news? No. Do they report, like, a truth that resonates, I think, with, like, what people would sort of see and experience in their daily lives were it not for these sort of massive, deeply penetrative, like, news media organizations? I think, no.
Why is he attacking them? Why is he attacking them?
Right. No, I think that's definitely, like,
you can't look at that as a good thing.
No. But,
and I also have a question for you guys. I'm serious, you know, just curious. Like, do you think that Donald Trump? Two questions. Do you think Donald Trump is a fascist? And second question, do you think that the administration that is in control right now in the United States is a fascist regime?
I think it's white nationalist for sure. I don't know if it's necessarily. I'd say so.
What's white nationalist, though? Nazi.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's why I kind of backpedaled there for a second. I guess it's as good example of fascism as anything else.
So,
you know? But Yeah, I mean,
I'm looking for like yes or no. Personally, I'm just like cut and dry, sort of like.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I mean, like.
You guys understand how fascist? I mean, you're anti-fascist. Antifa is out in the streets confronting, you know, face to face, and this kind of, you see the brutality. You see the ideology. You're teaching us about it, and yet your reaction is like, well, you know, the left has to do this, and we have to take the political. The game has changed. These fascists have swiped off the board, and we're still acting like our response to that should be how we go back to the 60s or the 70s. No, this is, how do you define it as fascism, and then your response to it? How do you define it as an emergency, and then your response to it is not an emergency?
It's kind of, you know, back to this question of diversity of tactics too, though, right? Is because, like, there is, like, as you said, there's, you know, like, kind of long-term goals versus what to be done in a state of emergency, right? So, like, when you have, what is the contemporary equivalent of brown shirts marching through the streets, that should be met, I think, with a mass movement of the people saying that they're not going to tolerate that in their communities. But things like the kind of galvanizing that we've seen with white supremacists, the KKK, neo-Nazis, the alt-right, all these different groups as of late, they're still only symptoms of a much larger problem, which is the collapse and crisis of late-stage capitalism. So even though I think that, like, yes, that should be met and addressed, it doesn't solve the problem. And goes back to largely, you know, kind of, whose question was it? You know, it was really the question of, like, a lot of the people in the audience and what they were asking of, like, you know, like, where do we move forward from here? You know, it's a question of...
My question is, do we let them consolidate, or do we not let them consolidate? Do we sit back and let them continue to consolidate this grip on power that they have, and then there's a state of emergency, there's a, you know, if this event that happened last night was a Muslim, that could very well be our Reichstag fire, you know? That could really, or lead to, you know...
Right, but I don't think...
I agree on the diversity of tactics, but we're saying this is fascism, and then at the same time, which is an extreme, like all the definitions you read, but then at the same time we're saying, but, yeah, it's fascism, I guess. You know, we need these different, you know, we need millions of people in the streets now. That's where the left needs to reunite. And I'm not a member of the RCP, and, you know, I don't give a shit if, you know, I don't care about all the sectarian bullshit. Since I came out as a college student, I was never, you know, people came and attacked me because I supported the line and everything. You're this, you're a Stalinist, you're that. No, I'm not, okay? You know, let's have a principled debate on it. Let's unite where we can unite, because we are facing a common enemy here, you know? And I call them the enemy. They are the enemy of people. They are the enemy of humanity. You know, and just imagine, and I will say that I spent a lot of time on Harvard campus and in the ghettos, you know, and it goes both ways. Students need to get into, need to be in the projects, need to go and experience, because the people that are in the street soldiers and the people that have lived this, maybe they don't know Marxist theory and they don't know all this stuff, but they lived it and it's in their face every day, you know, and we need to combine it. We have to bring the science and the ideologies with the masses of people.
Right, I think that's where it becomes a question of... You want
to... Like, I guess the way... I mean, like, to say before they consolidate power, the American right has had right, like, I don't know if you can draw a clean break with all these politicians. Like, Steve King's been in office for a long-ass time. I'm from Iowa. Like, those people have been there and a base for him. They aren't new. They're newly empowered in a new sort of way. But... I think, yeah, the reason for me, like, the line on fascism or not fascism, I think, is a matter of, like, what will someone respond to, right? Like, the concrete inhumanity of it is not in how it's structured so much. Like mass incarceration before, I don't know, like, that's...
Yeah.
I think just as brutal as anything that's like...
No, it's nothing to compare to what we're going to see moving forward. Nothing. It's a start to what these people want to do.
Right. Right. Like, but moving forward, but what presently exists, I think, yeah, like...
is a horror.
But it's also it's also a question of, like, you know, what is mass organization can do? I think that, like, mass organization is important. Getting people out there is important. But, like, what's the end goal here? You know, like, we saw with, like, the Women's March, it was, like, you know, hundreds and thousands of people on the street with, like, no clear political want being voiced, you know? So it's, like, you know, does it just become catharsis at some point? You know, like, without a further and deeper analysis, and, like, everybody, not necessarily everybody on the same page, you know? You don't have to have consensus, necessarily. But you do have to have some assemblage of a direction to go in, you know? And I do think that, like, it's important to engage, it should be first and foremost important to engage with the communities that we live in and get people together, but it has to go deeper than that, you know? Once you get everybody on the street, then what? You know, we can do that.
Right, well, we have a call. This nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. And we're calling people to come into the streets November 4th. And I've had just as many people, you know, we had a historian at our regional conference who was like, November 4th, you know, a lot of people like, why are you waiting so long? It's like, look, man, we were calling to stop it before it started. But now we're calling for a date. You know, everyone's here talking about it. What other group has called for a date that says November 4th, it begins? And those people that hate this shit and do want to come out, and do want to come out multiple times and sustain a resistance, which is what is going to be needed if any change is ever going to happen in this country, then they're going to be in the streets with us. And then maybe the first day in Sacramento, our protest gets attacked by skinheads or Nazis. And then that gets tweeted and it goes all around the globe. And then people in Hamburg are in the streets, and people in Sydney are in the streets. And that people in the U.S. and different towns and cities are rising up and drawing the dividing line like we did this week between Trump and Kaepernick, between Trump and Nazis and Heather Heyer. Pick a fucking side. There is no middle ground right now.
Yeah, let's take some more questions. Thanks. Aaron?
Yeah, I'm really glad this question of whether or not Trump is a fascist came up, because I want to ask the question of state power, and specifically, if we take Trump to be a fascist, then he is president right now, and I think this means that the number one priority for someone, you know, given those premises, would be, of course, to remove him from the presidency. At the same time, when Sid brought up Weimar Germany, I mean, you brought it up too, and like kind of Hitler's rise to power. I mean, it happened through a more respectable centrist being voted in as opposed to actually the Nazi party, as in, well, we want to stop the Nazis, so we'll get the next like worst thing and we'll vote for them. So for me, there's a question of really, can the left and should the left directly deal with state power? Because when I think about, you know, this resistance to Trump, well, it seems as though what we are going to get is just one of, you know, these other politicians in office at best. So how do we deal with that? How does that relate to resistance or the mass movement? And then I was hoping maybe, Elijah, if you could clarify a bit on what you think, you know, what you think Trump is and what you think's happening, because you've talked about, you know, for example, that what we need, that this is kind of an opportunity for the left in the form of the DSA, that there are new people that can be recruited, and that what we ought to do is be pushing the people who do have state power, who are in probably the Democratic Party, but maybe independent and aligned, to be putting forward different policies. And I mean, if you also think Trump is a fascist at the same time, I'm interested to see how you think those two interact. Or if you don't think Trump's a fascist and you think that, you know, this is kind of a strategy, a particularly good strategy for today, I think I would like to hear you clarify your position on that, because it's been a bit difficult for me to pin down what you think Trump is, what you think the problem is, and what you think the opportunity is. Because if we go back and we look, okay, because, I mean, you brought up the Mark Bray book, what is Antifa? What is Antifa, you know, kind of historically? Well, it's Black Bloc in the street fighting people. It's kind of these groups in the interwar period, you know, doing like kind of whatever they can to stop certain people getting in power. And so if those are the tactics that we're going to take up, you know, it's a question of one, do they work? Two, are they the best tactics for the situation? And then three, what about state power? So thank you.
Right now, like I'd say, like there doesn't exist any viable political entity that like you could call the left. I think there are the potential is to organize people into the left. I think like the vast majority of people see themselves as like sort of they're not political decision makers. Which like is by and large true because there's not infrastructure for them to like operate and express that. In terms of Trump, fascism, I think in its context in like the 1930s and any sort of harsh authoritarian regime that would emerge in like the 21st century, there's going to be like a lot of fundamental differences. Like globally, what it's emerging out is fundamentally different. Like if it works for someone to like, if someone is moved by the revelation that like Trump's policies are in line with fascist policies, like good, call him a fascist. I don't think that like that terminology is going to be the most effective for every person. Like, I think it comes down to like personal conversations. Can you get someone out to a rally? Are they going to like support this thing? Are they going to voice their support for something that they've always supported deep down? I think. Sorry, what were the other parts of your question?
State power and
state
the
power, state power, I don't know, I think that's one thing especially that's really different between now and like the 1930s is that like you have a lot of sort of non-state power, like corporate power in a form sort of removed from the state, I think definitely exists more, but a lot of the operations of the state itself sort of support that. Like the United States military budget is sort of this global police force for capitalism. So yeah, in terms of when you say state power, do you mean like what the state is exerting or what could be like leveraged through seizure of the state or like
a mixture of both, as in when you talk about, for example, pushing democratic politicians, that's not really a direct state power for the left, as in the left is kind of relying on these other people to answer demands. And if we're talking about some sort of, I mean, you know, thank you for clarifying your position on Trump, but that many people on the panel have been talking about fascists being in power in the United States state right now, then to me, you know, kind of what follows from that is, well, then we have to occupy that state power instead, and like immediately, that would be the logical kind of conclusion of that line of thought. And so, yeah, it was just confusing for me. I mean, in terms of what you've been saying, particularly that you would say, oh, Trump was a fascist, which you've now clarified, but then not be kind of concerned with immediately taking state power. But it's also a question of is there a place for something like a political party or independent political power for the left in the current resistance? Is that something that's important? I hope that kind of explains what I was trying to ask a bit more.
Yeah, I think in that regard, I think infiltration is more important because to try and form some kind of new leftist political party, I think ignores all of the attempts at forming a leftist political party that has already happened. And also doesn't reflect just the two-party system that we have to deal with now. So I think, to address your question, it might be more advantageous for us to infiltrate these channels that already exist in order to push things towards emancipation?
Yeah, the state power is, you know, in the hands of a class of people in this society, in this capitalist society. And amongst that, they have representatives that represent different ideas on how to administer that state power, both domestically and internationally. Some of those are Democrats. You have a H.R. McMaster, and you have a Stephen Miller, and there's this infighting going on right now. I'm not sure what you guys are referring to as state power, but they control the government, they control the military, they control the judicial system, they control everything right now. And these people are, Mike Pompeo at the CIA is having Bible studies, and at the EPA they're eliminating all the scientists, and they're gutting out, and they're creating a fascist state right now. And I don't care if you like the word or you don't like the word. If you have breast cancer and I'm your doctor, I'm not going to come in and tell you you have a chest cold, because it's going to make you have a better day and you're going to feel better about the rest of your week. I'm going to tell you you have stage 4 breast cancer. You need emergency operation right now. That's what's going on in the United States right now. This is not, you know, personally me, Ted Sirota, electoral politics in the United States is a dead end. It's not going anywhere. We see where it's led to. It's led to Donald Trump. This system has paved the way for this, and they accepted him. And all my friends who went and backed Bernie Sanders and were Bernie, and I told them months and months before, this system will never allow Bernie Sanders to become their representative. They would allow Barack Obama to ascend to that position, but they're not going to allow Bernie Sanders to ascend to that position. And any energy that's put into this, re-energizing into the system that keeps bringing up, and I feel like you guys are sort of, you know, you're if I'm hearing you correctly, you're talking about using the mechanisms that are feeding into this electoral system that are a charade that help keep this system of capitalism in place. And it's going to take, again, this is not refuse fascism, this is me saying as a communist, that it's going to take a revolution. It's going to take that struggle. It's going to take that organization. And people are going to have to do that. We're not going to get to the system by bypassing the fascists and lowering our heads. That's not going to happen. That is a suicide. And then not only that, it's a negligence. And it's a giving up, and it's a negligence of our responsibility to the rest of the planet. Imagine the celebration around the world. The day that this sustained protest has gone on day after day, and this crisis causes Donald Trump and Pence, who's backed him every step of the way, to be removed from power. And now the system has to have a special election, or they put Mitch McConnell, whoever. Then we've got millions of people in the street. We're not talking about where are we going to find the masses to educate them. And so we're in the streets battling with them. This is what it's going to take to stop it. This is what it's going to take to stop the mass deportation. You guys are normalizing this so much. It's unbelievable that he's calling black players sons of bitches in the NFL and calling them to be fired from the presidential pulpit. Oh, I guess it's fascist. I mean, this is not normal. This is the next level. And if we treat it like it's just a normal extension and normal growth, we haven't learned the lesson of what happened in Nazi Germany when socialists and communists did not unite and they fought each other. And the Democratic Party is trying to, and a lot of liberals are trying to vilify Antifa and turn them into this, like we started, this moral equivalence of Nazis. And that's paving the way to create these splits, you know, within the left. And everyone who hates what they see coming down on society right now, in this regime, whether you do think it's fascist or not, if you think it's intolerable, you got to act. I don't care if you've read Marx or you know who Adam Smith is or whatever. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think like to say something is electoral politics or not electoral politics is that's a false distinction. You know, like I think like whether or not Bernie Sanders won or lost a endorsement or a nomination, like it was sort of a drama that played out in view of people's lives, that they saw this person talking about like things that would be actually good for them. So I think like when we talk about like I mean, when you win seats in office, I think there's opportunity to demonstrate the greater possibilities and push further beyond that. Like, if you look at, like, Jeremy Corbyn and the type of, like, programs he is able to talk about and put forward and, like, actually create an engaging vision beyond what's existed before, like, that sort of bounce between, you know what, sometimes we can run as a Dem and win with someone who shares our values, that's good. Sometimes we can run them as an independent and they'll have a better chance of winning. That's also good. Yeah, I think in general, like, I don't think the left should have one strategy because a lot of people should be doing a lot of different things to attack us at a lot of different angles. Yeah, I don't remember the other parts of the question, so I'll leave it at that.
So forgive me, this will be a much more naive question than the questions everyone else has asked so far, and I guess I could qualify it, but I would just like to make it pithy and short. At what point in time did the Republicans become fascist?
My feeling is that with this election, the Republican Party has become fully fascist because the agenda that they got into office and they put now are their policies and what their everything they believe in align with that sort of, you know, there's a variance in degree between right-wing Republicans and Christian, you know, like Roy Moore, and there's a difference between Steve Bannon and whether we like it or not, you know, what's his name, Lindsey Graham, you know. To me, they're all fascists now because when you have a regime that's in power and wielding power and they're fascists, just like Trump, when he talked about Charlottesville, he refused to denounce the Nazis, you know. He made his moral equivalence. That, in essence, tells you that you're a Nazi supporter. Because if you're not speaking out against that, you know, then you are what you are. So if you're, and the Democrats are doing the same thing. I mean, the Democrats are just, I mean, they have the boot on their neck. Nothing's going to happen with the Democrats. They're like a hot knife through butter. Forget about them. You know? It's not going to happen. We can't rely on them. But, I'm sorry, I just got off on my track. just a simple question again, and I'll finish up.
I think there would be some common...
Oh, when did the Republican Party become fascist?
Yes.
Yeah, to me, this is a fascist regime that's in power right now. They're trying to consolidate it. They haven't been able to do that. There's infighting. There's people resigning. They're trying to control with General... not Flynn, but Kelly. You know, oh, he's going to act like an adult. They're trying to harness this power, but that power is trying to wipe them out and consolidate their own power as a fascist power. So if the Republicans in Congress and in the Senate are all voting yes, 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 and maybe they disagree with him in public or they say shame, 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 to me they're fascists.
Okay, so you're saying historically it has happened recently and that the Bushes weren't, for instance? Like...
Yeah, I would say yes. Now, I want, you know, yeah, as far as what is in power, I would say no, that the Bush regime and Nixon came very close, and I think that Nixon, when he fired, you know, Archibald Cox, that came the closest to a constitutional crisis, and I think people in the 60s were right to start calling him out as a fascist, considering what was going on in Vietnam and the murdering of all the Black Panther leaders and the American Indian movement. I think that was as close as we got. And then 9/11, it got very close to it again, and they really ramped it up, you know, and Clinton paved the way for that to happen. So I feel like this movement, the 1980s, going back to your thing with Reagan, this was the start of this, you know, trickle down, the war on drugs, turning the, you know, the mechanism of the state against the most oppressed and creating a generation of incarcerated youth and now adults, you know, three strikes laws, all this, what's led to the road of fascism. I really, you know, Nixon did a lot of it. Reagan amped it up, Bush amped it up, Clinton amped it up, Obama amped it up, but we're in a different place right now.
This is new.
Can I just add something to what you said, Ted?
Yeah.
So one of the hallmarks of fascism, as I understand it, is you basically have a turn toward a sort of open, naked, militaristic dictatorship. And part of the characteristic is not everyone in the powers that be is in the ruling class agrees with this turn. That's where some of the infighting comes. And Trump actually is in a position where he has to attack other people in his own class who aren't with the program. You saw it with his attacks on the mayor of San Juan. Right? You see it with his attacks on the NFL owners, right? You got to get your guys to shape up. And you're going to see it a lot of other places. So one shouldn't be confused by that. But part of it is suppressing the opposition that exists to him, even at the highest levels of society. So I have one other thing I wanted to come back to. During the Vietnam War era, Kissinger had this in one of his memoirs. He said there was a period during the Vietnam War era where they didn't know who was in charge. The masses of people were in the street opposing the Vietnam War. It was a very intense period. And my point on this is that the left at that time was not united. Right? But the people were in the street that had a big effect on the outcome of that war. Ask any vet who was in Vietnam what it meant to have people in the street opposing them. So to me, the correct focus is really, can we unite enough people to create a crisis that could derail this fascist regime? That is the question. And the uniting the left, although, seems to me puts the focus in sort of the wrong place. If we succeed in driving the Trump regime from power, believe me, people will feel really liberated and will be in a much better position to talk about what kind of, you know what I mean? We will have talked and done something about the kind of society we want, but we'd be in a lot better position to actually develop these kinds of unity and program to do something from that point on. That's, anyway, sorry. Take some.
Maybe we take one last question from Patrick and then we wrap up. It's been a while.
Yeah, good. Hey, I just wanted to ask what happens if Antifa is unable to organize a mass mobilization against Trump? Discontents with capitalism will continue to be expressed, and the necessity of overcoming capitalism will continue. So what happens if Antifa isn't the way to go? If people don't respond to it in mass, what do you do that?
You mean like Antifa as an organization, as a philosophy,
as a particular response to the Trump administration?
You're talking about like street mobilization, specifically against like fascist movement?
Right. What happens if the left is unable to organize mass mobilization against Trump on the basis of anti-fascism?
I think the definition of anti-fascism, I mean, when people say it without sort of qualifying it, it can be kind of, it can go different ways. Like, refuse fascism, like anyone who's against fascists is anti-fascist. I mean, the United States in World War II was anti-fascist, you know. So tens of millions of people are anti-fascist in that way. Like the people are saying, you know, my grandfather fought the Nazis, you know, so I didn't have to. And then there's Antifa, you know, where people are identifying themselves in a certain, you know, organizational sense, in a certain tactic, in a certain outlook, you know. So we're refuse fascism is not what has been being, you know, called Antifa in the news and vilified and attacked. Like, I don't wear a ski mask when I go out, you know, but we understand that. I mean, we're not fighting Antifa. We're anti-fascists as well. We look to fight these fascists. We're not calling on the same tactics. We're not calling to physically confront fascists in the streets. We're talking about massive civil disobedience, massive cr- creative resistance and protest throughout society. So I can't really speak to that as far as tactics, but I don't see Antifa as a group trying to organize the left to drive out the...
Well, let me just rephrase my question. You know, what happens if the left is unable to organize a mass mobilization against Trump?
Okay, why don't we use this, the answer to this question to also make some closer comments?
Yeah, I think it's, for me personally, I think of anti-fascist tactics as a thing that is more meant to address, as Ted was saying, like more states of emergency as far as like community defense is concerned, you know, like, but this question of, you know, does, you know, masking up and blocking in the streets, is that a fully developed tactic against the current regime? I don't think systemically it is. It's more a thing meant to address protecting the lives of our friends and families in the communities that we love. I think that to come up with a larger and more robust response is a thing that requires more analysis and more conversation. I do.
Yeah, I mean, I think going back to like what you said, like during the Iraq wars, you had millions in the streets. Like Occupy, you had people in like 600 different cities. But I think like without sort of a alternative program, you're not going to see them blossom into anything other than sort of these sort of stopgap resistance measures that ultimately don't have like the same programmatic and like analysis of power. Like the right is incredibly well organized, and I think we need to get in the streets, but that's not ever going to like be a complete measure in itself. And I don't think anyone up here is saying that it is. So I think like for me, it's never a matter of like instead of this, do this. It's more just like do this and also make sure you start doing this as well. And the start doing this as well, I think, would just have to be like present something that's better than the Iraq war, and that's just like, oh, not the Iraq war, but everything else the same. So I think like sort of a, personally, I think fighting against nationalism and fleshing this out, not as a American issue, but as a global issue, is super, super crucial. I will leave it at that.
Yeah, what happens if we don't prevent them and they continue and they consolidate their rule through, you know, further gerrymandering, you know, and they don't necessarily need a state of emergency to guarantee their continued victory and their continued, you know, dominance in the political spectrum. They've sort of figured that out already. That's how we won now. They lost the popular vote, you know. So if we fail, we're going to be living under a fascist regime, and who knows how long that's going to take to get rid of, if ever, you know. And again, here, and in our statement, the last statement of these nightmares we call out, nightmare regime step by step discarding basic democratic rights, targeting group after group and suppressing dissent and resistance. A regime unleashing the violence of fascist thugs. This is fascism, a qualitative change in how society is governed. History has shown that fascism must be stopped before it becomes too late. You know, I was out there on January 20th, I saw people getting rounded up. I saw a photographer who had been attacked by the police and pepper sprayed in the face. And that felt like a war zone that day in Washington, D.C. It felt like a dystopian future, but we also took the streets. But those protesters are facing 75 years in prison. And the state is going after, as you probably all know, the host, Dream Host, who hosted the Disrupt J20 website, going after the URL addresses, IP addresses of all the visitors of the site. And now they're going after three of the organizers and in court and have demanded, you know, all their social media and their cell phones and all this stuff. You know, the left is going to be in prison if we don't. You know, the left is not going to be debating out here and open at the University of Chicago about what are we going to do. We're going to be underground. We're not going to be able to openly organize like that. That's the type of society that we're moving towards. Everyone here needs to ask themselves if that's the kind of future that they want. Because what you're taking for granted now is what they're trying to get rid of. I'm an atheist. I'm a communist. I was married to a black woman who grew up in Inglewood. My daughters are biracial. My second wife is Puerto Rican. My stepson is Puerto Rican and Spanish. I'm a jazz musician. They want to stomp me out, and I'm white. These people are about genocide, you know? They just banned everybody coming in from these seven countries again. This is how it starts. You know, you scapegoating. Who's talking about scapegoating? Who's talking about scapegoating entire sections of society? Muslims, you know? That's fascism. Was Barack Obama scapegoating people? Was Barack Obama talking about openly about molesting women? Was he talking about, you know, firing people because they spoke out against the flag? This is the President of the United States. This is not a game show host anymore. This is very, very serious. And I, you know, there's a few people in this room, but like I posted today on Facebook, you know, you guys didn't see my Facebook post? Like Rosa Parks, you know, Colin Kaepernick refusing to stand up, just one person. You know, we can make this happen. The power of the people is way greater than anything that they're going to throw at us. It's just a matter of are we going to be brave enough to take that challenge. You know, and I'll say, what's going to happen? I don't know. You know, we don't want to see what's going to happen after 4 years. You know, let alone 8 years of this. 8 years, let alone 4 years of this regime. They're already imperiled the Earth. I'm not exaggerating. They're on the brink of nuclear war. He's calling this guy who has nuclear weapons Little Rocket Man. He's trolling him. These are our lives. This is our planet. Yeah. You know, we need to move towards a world without these fucking borders, without these classes, without the oppression of women, without the oppression of people of color. And till we have a society, you know, a world of freely associated human beings. What's wrong with that? The Earth cannot sustain this. And it can't sustain it under fascism, that's for sure. So I'd like to unite with anybody who wants to drive these people from power. I understand that the systemic and that this is a symptom of the disease, but we gotta go through that. We gotta cut that head off, and when we gotta in that struggle, we're gonna be strengthened. I'll just wrap it up. The day after he was elected, I told my friends, we need to make the 1950s, we need to make the 1960s look like the 1950s. And I still feel that way. And I asked anyone, meaning that what the outburst had happened in the 60s was not enough. What we need now needs to make that look like the 1950s in order to have a future for humanity. So, thank you for having me. Thank you, guys.
Thank you again to our panelists.
Thank you, everyone.
Said everything?
Yeah, they wrapped up.
Okay, good. All right, thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
And if you would like to come at 4:30 tomorrow at Harbor Cut Cafe,